everybody, welcome to the Friday Safe Trek UCTC seminar. Today we've got Dave Campbell from Bike East Bay presenting about bikeways post CEQA. So, Dave, take it away.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for coming. Some familiar faces in the room. Good to see you again. And for those who don't know, I am the advocacy director with Bike East Bay. We are formerly the East Bay Bicycle Coalition. This is our brand new newsletter that announces the name change. I'll just hand this around to folks. Just take a look at it while I talk. And for those that don't know, East Bay Bike Coalition formed 42 years ago to get bike access on BART and has since grown into a full-service bike advocacy organization in Alameda and Contra Costa counties. And I do our advocacy work, and I've been doing that for off and on 17 years, living in Berkeley, and now I live in Oakland, and now I do it full time. Over the years, I've done other had other responsibilities with the coalition, including promoting Bike to Work Day or running our bike safety education program. Now it's advocacy full time, which is great, and. Which brings us to a topic that we've dealt with a lot over the years, and that is traffic level of service or traffic delay when it comes to striping bike lanes or building bikeways on streets. And we've had a lot of projects over the years that have dealt with this issue. And just, you know, in a nutshell, real quick, the issue is if you take out a lane on a street, either a turn lane or a travel lane, there, you can slow cars down, and that makes traffic engineers worried. And if it slows cars down too much, the project could be jeopardized or compromised or redesigned in ways that aren't ideal. So we've dealt with a lot of those over the years, and what brings the subject to the forefront now is a law that got passed last year, SB 743. I call it the Sacramento Kings bill, but those who are wonkier than me would call it the CEQA reform bill or the LOS reform bill, which got merged with the Sacramento Kings bill, and in this weird exercise in reading legal bills, you learn a little bit about both when you're learning about CEQA reform and traffic analysis. And so this is an important bill for lots of reasons, but one is on this issue of level of service and making changes to the roadway. And we're going to have to figure out what to do with this. But before we figure out what to do with it, let me just review real quickly what were some ways cities approached CEQA in the past, at least East Bay cities approached CEQA and level of service in the past in projects where we're trying to put a bike lane on the street. And these are all projects where we wanted to take out something on the street to make space for the bike lane. And, well, the first one is a situation where we actually weren't trying to take anything out. There's just plenty of space on the roadway to strike the bike lane. It's just a non-issue, and the city does it. An example of that would be 55th Street in Oakland, North Oakland. It was just this wide street. It probably could have been four lanes of traffic, but it was two with parking. And Oakland just added a bike lane a few years ago. So that's a non-issue. The second one is a street where there's just plenty of capacity. There's just so much capacity, the traffic engineer would look at the street and go, sure, take out two lanes, you know, let's just do it. Those have been very few and far between over the years, but there has been one or two of those that we've succeeded on. But again, it's pretty rare that the traffic engineer is comfortable losing a lane of traffic without some sort of analysis. Categorical exemption is, if you read the guidelines for CEQA, it says if you stripe a bike lane, you're categorically exempt. You think we'd be home free with that one, but we're not. And Telegraph Avenue in Oakland was the case that really made that clear, where Oakland was going to take out the center turn lane on Telegraph, put in bike lanes, and the judge said that is not categorically exempt, even though you are striping a bike lane. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Telegraph as we come up. Neg deck or mitigated neg deck is, we see that with a lot of bike plans. city'll do a bike plan. Michelle, to my left here, has done lots of bike plans, and the city approves them with a neg deck, or I don't know if a bike plan's ever been approved with a mitigated neg deck, but some bike projects could as well. And that's usually what we see, and that's kind of what we'd like to see, is just do a neg deck. Hey, there's no impact. Just write the bike lane. Another approach is do a full EIR. Study the alternatives, look at all the feasible mitigations, spend several years doing this, and see what can be done. And if there is an impact after doing a full EIR, the city council could adopt a statement of overriding considerations and approve the bike lane project. And that's only happened once, to my knowledge, in the East Bay, in the 17 years that I've been doing this advocacy work. Very rare that that'll happen. And if it does happen, it typically would happen as part of a larger project that would warrant a statement of overriding considerations. The bike lane wouldn't carry the day on that.
Just for clarification, San Francisco got in trouble with the NYSA, right? Is that what happened when the bike plan was taken to court?
I think that's right. And if anyone knows, they didn't do a full EIR. That was the judge's challenge to the city. So they either did a neg deck or a mitigated neg deck. And San Francisco was removing lanes, and the judge said that can have an impact on bus service. That was one issue that the judge underlined. And so, yeah.
I think that I have this in another presentation. I can't remember the details, but they had two parts of the RICID plan, and they had put like a project in another part of it, and they said, well, we're going to do the EI analysis when we do the project. But And so somehow they cleared their bicycle plans without analyzing the project, and that's what the judge said, no, since you've got, you can't have these two pieces and pretend that that piece isn't part of this piece. So, because they need to do a full EIR.
Can everyone give me a sense of your comfort level with CEQA? How much, if you have a background question, by all means, go ahead and ask. I'm assuming there's a certain level of knowledge here. Okay, moving along. So we did get some projects approved under the way CEQA used to work with traffic analysis. I'll just go through some of these real quick and let you get a sense of them. The first one, Marin Avenue in Albany. It's also partly in Berkeley. This is where the BART tracks cross Marin Avenue, and this was four lanes. Now it's three lanes and bike lanes. One of the three lanes is the center turn lane. There was huge opposition to this project, and a lawsuit was filed. This was pre-San Francisco's lawsuit. And we ended up getting the bike lanes approved on a technicality that we certainly could not rely on in the future getting the bike lanes approved. But the judge did say that you need to study traffic that would be diverted off of Marin onto the neighborhood streets. And the traffic engineer, he admitted, I haven't looked at that. And he also admitted, I don't know how to look at that. You know, the streets in the neighborhood are just winding streets. There's no real grid system to look at. Thank God for the technicality. And Marin Avenue got the bike lanes. But the city of Albany did a full-blown traffic analysis. They did there's two levels of traffic analysis you can do, and they did the one where the computer model is projected in the street and all the lights and the blinky things and the people moving around. They did that kind of a traffic analysis, which is more expensive, I understand, and takes more time, and it's often not done.
Question?
Sure.
Do you know if they've done an after analysis?
They did.
And do you know what they found?
I can't remember all the details. They found, generally the people that live on the street love it. The people who live way up in the hill and drive to the freeway aren't super fans of it, but, you know, there's no recurring.
Well, they were the people who are mostly opposed to it.
Exactly.
What did they say on the Sorry. Not much. But their own home.
Their views. They're fan of their views, for sure. They did before and after crash data, and there just wasn't enough crash data really to, I think, statistically show anything.
In terms of traffic speed, did they find that it slowed traffic?
It did. It did. It was, the numbers were, I think it was around 30, in the low 30s for four, and it dropped, I think, 3 or 4 miles per hour on average. Yeah. Exactly. It's still above
right.
25.
It's still scary to cross Marin as a pedestrian. I mean, cars still come around those curves pretty quickly, but it's got to be much better than
what. For your information, this was a pedestrian safety project. This was not a bike project, per se. And this was phase one of the project. Phase two was to address additional pedestrian safety concerns if this phase didn't satisfy them. So since this project went in, there's been additional bulb outs for pedestrians and crosswalk improvements to try to make it safer still. FYI. And then nearby is the Alameda. This is the extension of MLK up in North Berkeley, very close. It actually crosses Marin Avenue to cut the bike lanes. And this, again, was four lanes, and it was, like, wide, a super wide four-lane street. And parents were walking their kids across the street to go to school, and a kid did get hit. The kid did not die. That happened shortly before this project, but she did get hit. And so there was testimony at a public workshop, and parents were saying, you know, we can't even walk our kids across the street. But the Marin project right next door, the memories were still very fresh in a lot of people's minds, particularly those who did not like the Marin project. And boy, did they show up at this meeting to say, oh, look at Marin, it was a failure. Now you're doing it again. And I'll give credit to Lori Capitelli, the city council member here in Berkeley, who just took leadership on this project and took heat. I'm sure his phone rang off the hook. Some people who didn't like this project. But it's out there. Go ride it. It's still relatively new. It hasn't even been on the ground for a year yet. And decide for yourself if you think the street's better. I'm pretty confident if you talk to anybody who lives on the street, they'll say it's way better. They haven't done, I don't know, but before or after study on this project.
Can I add an interesting, just something I learned from a Transportation Commission meeting that, or member that, on this, there was some creative engineering because the engineers were having trouble justifying it was definitely going to create, you know, more congestion. But because Berryman has a four-way stop, there was already all of that congestion there. So when they redid the analysis to factor in that Berryman was already going to produce congestion, whether or not there were four ceilings, it actually resolved the problem. And that's kind of like a nice way for planning and engineering to be able to work together. And to come up with a solution that actually a lot of people wanted, but at one point the numbers were not working in the favor of the project.
Yeah, that was, this photo is taken at Hopkins. I don't know if y'all are familiar with the intersection. So Berryman is one or maybe two blocks behind me taking this photo. And it's a four-way stop, and it's just one lane in each direction. And you had this four-lane street here, so it seemed silly. So they did get creative in merging from 2 to 1 to, you know, just to the south of here before the project. And after the project, they may have done something creative to handle that.
They haven't done anything else at Berryman, but the way Berryman figures in is that it made the analysis work from a traffic engineering standpoint that the level of service is already declining, whether or not, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, you go to Berryman, you get... You are at a stop sign, and they weren't going to change that.
Okay.
It's kind of a nice
There is a Walmart proposed in Hercules, and it was going to result in level of service F, and the traffic engineer said the street is actually already F, so it's going to have no significant impact.
Yeah. And that way it
sounds like Hercules all over again. Yay for level of service. MacArthur Boulevard. This is in Oakland. This is out at Mills College. Again, a four-lane street. It sweeps around the campus and heads up to the Diamond District from Seminary. And there was lots of community meetings to improve this street in many ways, walking, biking, and just kind of greening it up and making it less asphalt. So there's a lot of community support, and they came up with great designs, and the city said, oh, this project's going to cost $15, $20 million to do. And somebody raised their hand and said, okay, when are you going to do it? And the city said, oh, we don't have any of that money, so we have a great plan to put on the shelf. But the federal stimulus money got released shortly after that, and it had lots of repaving money in it. And the federal government wanted the money spent right away. Spend it to get the economy going again. And so that was an opportunity for us to push for the lane reduction as part of the repaving. And the analysis was showing that, well, one, AC Transit hated this, wanted no part of this. And the traffic analysis was kind of done on the back of a napkin. The traffic consultant sort of admitted it off the record. They did no real full traffic analysis. They just sort of had a sense that we think this can work. But they had huge community support. They had all these community meetings on the plan itself. And so the city traffic decision maker kind of stood up and said, we're going to do this. And it's not often that you would see your hardworking public servants do that.
Without a CEQA analysis?
Yeah. Don't tell anyone. This is pretty much brand new if you're riding out there. Lakeshore Ave. Okay, so this is the poster child for how we're never going to get a bikeway network built if we have to do a full EIR with statements of overriding considerations. That's what it took to get this bike lane in. Mm-hmm. Sorry the picture's not better showing up. This is the south or the east side of the lake. That's Lakeshore Ave. And it switched from four lanes with no turn lane to one lane with a center turn lane and bike lane. And the EIR said if you do that on Lakeshore, you're going to cause level of service F over at kind of where the Grand Lake Theater is, over that, where the freeway is there near the Grand Lake Theater. And the project, this project along Lakeshore was part of Measure DD, which was in passed in 2000, I think, with 80% of the public voting yes. Let's rebuild our park, let's rebuild the lake. And the city council said, all right, if 80% of the people in Oakland support these projects, including this, we're going to pass a statement of overriding considerations. Mm-hmm. And that's the only time that I've ever recall that happening. And it took, you know, this larger project with 80% support to make it happen. Anybody ridden Lakeshore Ave in the last 5 years since this has happened? Does anybody think it's a worse street now than it was before? In any respect? Okay.
Look at cars passing turn lane.
Okay. Passing each other or passing?
Yeah, passing other cars occasionally.
Okay. Well, the turn lane is sitting there.
But it's better.
It's better. Okay. Do you move over that way? Or?
My parents live. I'll make sure.
Okay, so these are four success stories. We've had plenty of stories that are not successful. Let's go through those real quick. And, yeah, Cutting Boulevard is the first in the queue. This is in Richmond. The street runs east-west. It's the main, it's one of the main connectors to all of the Richmond shoreline stuff where there's office parks, there's industry, there's the bay trails there. It's really nice. And the bike plan just got passed a year ago saying bike lane on Cutting Boulevard. And I think this is, again, that federal stimulus money to repave streets. And so the city had to do it quickly. And the city said, all right, we're going to repave the street and put no bike lane in it. So we jumped, hit the battle station button, and started making phone calls. And we were able to get the city to squeeze the bike lane in. If you can tell in the photo, it's still two lanes. The bike lane is squeezed in. The bike lane looks way bigger than it actually is. And that's parking on the right. And you're not seeing any parked cars. But the traffic levels on the left is very typical of what you see on the street. It just doesn't carry much traffic at all. And I mean, the traffic engineer easily could have said, like on MacArthur Boulevard, you know, we're going to do this to make it happen. But they just weren't ready for it. So they squeezed in a bike lane. It's more like a door zone lane if cars are parked there. It's not anything I would say we're particularly proud of, but it's better than not having the bike lane there. But the city could have done better. They could have taken on a lane of traffic and put the bike lane in.
Okay, I've got one question on. Two questions online. First one, what is the operating concept of the striping between the bikeway and the travel lane on MacArthur? How the two stripes and cross stripes are both to deter or prohibit motorists from entering the bikeway? If so, then aren't bicycles prohibited from crossing it? Does anyone do focus groups or surveys to determine how motorists interpret it?
And is that one question?
Four questions in one. Second is, what are cities doing to prevent crashes and
door-zone bike lanes? Yeah, okay, well, the answer to the second one is they're striping better bikeways, much better bikeways. According to the NACDO bikeway design guide, not that, you know, like this. We're looking at the MacArthur Boulevard slide. The door zone lanes, I'm not saying cities don't do that anymore, but the approach is if it's a street that doesn't have a lot of turnover for parked cars, if, for example, a residential street, they'll do it. If it's a commercial corridor, they won't do it anymore. They'll bump this out to more like 14 feet. 14 feet is Berkeley's minimum parking plus the bike lane width. On this design, can you break the first question down?
What's the function of the buffer and aren't bicycles prohibited from crossing it?
Okay, yeah, so the buffer is to put the car further from you so you don't have to rub elbows with the car mirrors, and people really enjoy that. The buffering you're seeing on the right, you can sort of see the buffering on the right, that's because the sidewalk is going to be widened as part of phase two of the project. And the city figured, let's just go ahead and stripe it as it's going to be when that sidewalk is widened. So the sidewalk's going to come to that white line you see on the right, and that's another like 6 to 8 feet for the sidewalk. That's the buffering on the right. Otherwise, it wouldn't be there. The buffering on the left is just to space you from cars, and cars are going very fast here. The house to the left, where I took this photo, the road makes a sweeping right turn to the point where I took this photo. And the house, right at that sweeping right turn, twice had a car crash into its front yard, into the house, because it's just a freeway here. So the buffering helps get you space from higher speed traffic. The solid white lines, there is a difference of opinion in California whether that allows bicyclists to cross the white lines. I think it means the motorists can't cross either. But in all practicality, people cross it. Problems with that. There's nothing on the right here. This is Mills College, so there's no entrance. There's absolutely nothing there but a fence and trees. So there's no reason for a car to need to cross that. It would only be the bike needing to get out. That
kind of the last part was just asking about studies of how motorists interpret that.
Yeah.
Like focus groups, anything?
Yeah, that I don't know. It's a good question. All right, back to Telegraph. So this is Telegraph, photo taken from the Fox Theater looking north through the Kono District up towards the MacArthur BART station. And so back in 1999, the city was going to take out the center turn lane, not actually right here in front of the Fox Theater, but a little bit further up where the center turn lane starts and goes all the way up to Berkeley. They were going to take that out, put in the bike lanes, and make Telegraph look like it looks further up towards Berkeley, where they took the center turn lane out, put in bike lanes 2 to 3 years before this project. We're just going to extend that probably all the way to downtown. And the judge said, well, the CEQA guidelines said, if you're striping a bike lane, you're categorically exempt. And the judge said, yeah, that's great, but you're also removing a center turn lane. That is not in the CEQA guidelines. And this is a center turn lane removal project or case. This is not a bike lane case. And he ruled in favor of the protagonists, we'll call them, and the project got stopped, and Oakland felt like they needed to do a full EIR. They weren't ready to do a full EIR. And then AC Transit came in and said, we've got this bus rapid transit project we want to put on Telegraph, and we're ready to write bike lanes as part of it. So the Telegraph Avenue bikeway project kind of got pushed aside for the bus rapid transit project. And for those who follow that, know the bad news there is Telegraph didn't want bus rapid transit. And Berkeley started, and then Temescal said, we don't want it. Kono District, in their defense, was ready for bus rapid transit. It just functionally didn't work to take it partly up Telegraph and stop. So bus rapid transit starts at the old Sears building there, and it goes to the family entrance. So now that there's no bus rapid transit on Telegraph, now we're looking at Telegraph. See what we can do. And we'll talk about that a little bit. Harrison Street at Oakland. This is Lake Merritt is immediately to our right. That's Grand Avenue crossing Harrison. And if you go another block or two, you're at Whole Foods. And so as part of Measure DD, this was another Measure DD project, 80% support from the voters. We wanted that right lane converted to a bikeway, a nice buffered bikeway. and the traffic engineer said, if you do that, traffic's going to back up a couple blocks, and I'm not comfortable with that. So they wouldn't put a bike lane in here. They put that chair in there that you see today. The bike lane, there's a bike lane further back that sweeps around to the right and gets you on your grand. That's great. That works. But if you're going up Harrison to Piedmont or to Whole Foods or there's a school up there, you get to dodge traffic. And then this is Dublin Boulevard out in Dublin. It's three lanes in each direction. And they are, this is a, their PDA, their priority development area. There's a the new West Dublin BART station is right to the right of this photo, and the East Dublin station is a little further down. But this is their PDA. They want to make this into a walkable, bikeable, transit-rich downtown. They got grant money to do lots of things here, including fixing Dublin Boulevard. And we said, great, let's take out that right lane and put in a buffer bike lane and bring the street down to four lanes. There is a center turn lane here. It's a landscaped center turn lane that doesn't show up too well with very deep turn pockets. And what's the traffic volume? 28,000 a day. Does anybody know, is that a good number to bring a street down to four lanes with a center turn lane, or is that too high?
But I think 20,000 being the limit for a road diet to three lanes.
Yeah. Or one with the center turn lane. Yeah. This was, as I understand it, I'm not a traffic engineer, having taken traffic engineering classes, but this is a borderline case. We're right in that range where you could do it. If you have center turn pockets, that really helps. But the traffic engineer said, no, the traffic's going to back up in those turn pockets. It's going to back up out of the turn pockets into through traffic. And that's just this deal breaker in the eyes of the traffic engineer. And they did the model. They showed us the lights moving all around, showing people moving. And but they're just not able to make any assumptions about people switching from cars to bikes or people living here in the future and living and walking or biking here and affecting mode share of split. They just can't make those assumptions. So the city of Dublin said, we're not ready for this. The city council did say, I think one day we will be ready for this. We're just not ready yet. So they punted. All right. So those are some good cases, some bad cases, and so now we jump to more recent legislation. And maybe I'll take this moment to give Michelle a little credit. She's got a paper that has been submitted to the ITE Journal for publication, and it's largely talking about what I'm about to talk about here. So what do we do about traffic and level of service now that these two bills got passed, the 2010 and the 2013 bills. And Michelle's paper takes a broader approach and looks at transit-oriented development issues and some transit issues. And I'm thinking more about bikes, and that's what our talk here today is. But kudos for Michelle also recognizing this. It's a very ripe issue. So look for her paper coming out in a couple months, we think.
Yeah, we think I'm waiting for the email when it's going to come out. Yeah. Hopefully June or July, I think.
So I've taken, this is a very brief summary of some of the bike-related stuff from Michelle's paper. And in 2010, we got a bill passed that changed the CEQA guidelines a little bit and at least added to it that you can consider other modes when looking at the transportation system. And it was actually pretty decent language. It said, you know, if you're going to impact car level service, if the overall transportation system works a little better, you're allowed to look at that. And I don't know of one bike project that actually did result in the bike project because the overall circulation system was improved. There's only 3 years for that to happen. And then SB 743 came along and that was signed last September. And it does several things in addition to getting the Sacramento Kings a new arena. It says no LOS. If you're in a transit priority area, don't study LOS. And it uses mandatory language. You shall not do that. You can study safety, you can study air pollution. I think noise is the third thing you can study if you're in a transit priority area.
Is that auto LOS specifically?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, auto LOS. Everyone get that?
Yeah.
But the Office of Planning and Research needs to come up with some new guidelines that they're busy doing to, you know, tell cities about how to look at this issue. And it's, from what we understand, what they're looking at is vehicle miles traveled. It's going to be the new way of looking at this. Auto trips generated is another way to look at it. Multimodal level of service is a third way to look at it. And the people that we work with in the Bike Coalition, we're voting for VMT to be the winning choice. And we think that's the way it's going, just based on rumors and hearsay at this point. The new guidelines will be out, I think, in June or July of this year, and then they go through a year-long process to get approved and put into place. In the meantime, and that's for CEQA purposes. And so in the meantime, we still have bike projects, but even after that, we're going to have bike projects. And we know bike projects aren't going to add vehicle miles traveled. They just don't do that. But that doesn't mean the traffic engineers are going to stop thinking about traffic delay for bike projects or for any other type of projects. So every city is going to have to figure out, what do we do about traffic studies aside from CEQA? We still, for bike projects, for transit projects, for pedestrian improvement projects, what are we going to do? And that's what we need to start figuring out. And we don't know the answers to those questions. That's partly the point of my talk here. A couple more summaries from Michelle's approach is, one is she recommends make sure your study is multimodal. You're not just looking at car level of service or anyone's level of service. You're looking at everyone. And it's not on level of service. It's on the needs of each user. What does each user of the roadway need? I think that's very much spot on about the issue. So make it multimodal. Look at the needs of all the users. Study benefits. That's the one thing under CEQA. You couldn't look at the benefits. If your project benefited walking and biking, CEQA does not care. They want to know, what are the impacts? What are the negatives of your project? That's all CEQA really wants you to look at. So moving forward, studying the benefits is part of a multimodal approach to transportation. And then the other thing that didn't get studied a lot is the impact of mitigation. And Michelle uses a couple of common examples in her paper. The ones we've dealt with is like the UC Berkeley long-range development plan. Anybody read that document? There's going to be more traffic and more people and more development as part of that. And the university said to the city, we'll put traffic lights everywhere, and that's going to handle a lot of this traffic. And we'll put in left turn pockets everywhere so cars can get through these new traffic lights. And that squeezes out the bikeway. And we wrote a letter to the university and the city saying, you're squeezing out the bikeway when you do that. Please study the impact of that. And the university came back and said, we don't have to do that. So their mitigation was traffic lights and turn pockets for the increased traffic. They didn't have to study the impact of those mitigations. And that's very frustrating. So that should be part of the analysis. The one example, Michelle, you used, I think, for the bus. There was a new traffic light to allow cars to make a left out of a new development. And that could slow down buses. So you suggested the city could put in a bus-only lane to get through there as a mitigation. So the new traffic light to allow people to make a left is a mitigation for the new traffic, but it has an impact on buses. That needs to be studied. So I'm in agreement with all of these related points from Michelle's paper. What I would add that are more bike-related is, and this is what I want to see cities do, is don't study traffic delay at all for any reason whatsoever. Just stop doing it. And what you should do is start designing from the curb out, and you can start with the sidewalk and ask, how wide should the sidewalk be here? And then what kind of bikeway should be provided? And, you know, what transit amenities do we need? And, you know, then we should have a car lane for sure. And whatever's left, you can reallocate. But stop designing from the center line towards the curb and ask, how many car lanes do we need? How much parking do we need? And then whatever's left, maybe there's some room for the sidewalk and the bike lane. kind of how it's done now, and that needs to be flipped. Study safety for all users. By all means, just stop studying delay. And that's if it's a bike project. The bike project's impact on safety needs to be studied for pedestrians and transit riders getting on and off buses, for example, for sure. And then once you've done that, yeah, maximize what's left. Reallocate and maximize things for all the users of the roadway. But stop studying traffic delay. Anybody a traffic engineer in the room? Okay.
Also
anxious for your reaction, but you're Michelle's a traffic engineer too. Not worried about your reaction. What would happen if we stopped studying traffic delay? That's what I'd like to see the new that cities, you know, adopt some new transportation policy. Well, the obvious thing that can happen is backups. And if there's a lot of backups and there's just that one lane that the buses use, then the buses can get off schedule. And that's not a good thing. There's loading zone issues. If you do a 4-to-3 lane conversion, your bike lanes, so there's just one lane left for traffic, cars or trucks will load in those lanes and that blocks potentially everybody. But backups by far, I think, is the issue that most people would be concerned about. The bus is running on time. There's improvements that we know about that we can use to speed the buses up. And loading zone issues, I think, are very manageable. But the backups are what scare people. And to just put this issue in perspective, anybody know what we're looking at here? Top 10 congested spots in the Bay Area. This is from 2005, which I chose because it's kind of the peak of, considered the peak of, you know, BMT nationally. And so this was the boom years of people driving. And if you look at number one there, that's 80, and it backs up from the bridge, even sometimes on the bridge, all the way up to Hercules sometimes. And if you look at number 8, that's out in Brentwood, that's a huge backup heading east in the evening commute. The Livermore one in the morning, number 3, is a huge long commute. So picture the bikeway on Marin Avenue, for example. If we were to propose that, and the resulting backup in the mind of the traffic engineer was as long as number 1 there, what would be the prospect of us getting that project approved? Probably pretty low. Yet, how many projects have been approved in Contra Costa County or Napa County or Solano County that led to the delay that we're seeing here at number 1? And how many traffic engineers still have their job because they approved those projects? In other words, these delays, we're not happy about them, but we live with them. The bike project delays, thankfully, are much shorter. Let's just look at a couple of those real quick and see what would happen if we just didn't study delay. So this is Telegraph. Back to Telegraph. The city of Oakland is looking at taking out lanes and putting in bikeways on this stretch that was subject to the lawsuit 15 years ago, roughly from 20th Street downtown all the way up to 57th Street, where the bike lane started. And I don't know how well y'all can see that here, but the red is Telegraph, and if you can see it or if you're familiar enough with the area, if Telegraph got congested, say in the Temescal area, you know, in the worst fears of either a merchant or somebody who lives there or a neighborhood resident or a traffic engineer, what would happen in addition to the cars would back up? What would happen? That is so horrific that we can't let it happen. The people we've talked to on Telegraph, particularly in the Temescal area, they feel like the traffic volumes there are people just cutting through on Telegraph to get to the freeway. It's not people living there, working there, visiting there, getting in and out of there, which they all want. It's just people cutting through there. I don't know if that's true or not, but that sounds reasonable to me. What would those people do if we took out a lane in each direction on Telegraph and didn't study doing it, we just did it? They may go to the freeway. That might be the obvious first suggestion. That big yellow line to the left is the freeway that got built decades ago. Other parallel streets are Shattuck. They might use Shattuck to get up to Berkeley. Broadway is a couple blocks over, and Broadway goes up to the freeway. those balloons that I put on the map show the freeway on-ramps that are in the area. So Broadway takes you right up to a freeway on-ramp. There's MLK Way, it's just to the left of the freeway. There's Market Street, there's San Pablo. And to me, as a bike advocate, this is the poster child of there's options out there for this commute corridor, and we don't need to delay a project 2 or 3 years to study traffic delay. We should study ways to make a 5-to-3 street work. You know, what can we do from the traffic engineering perspective to speed the buses up, make it safe to cross, and make sure the lights work efficiently to get the traffic through there. But we shouldn't study whether to do the project or, you know, show these simulated light shows how everybody's going to use the street. We have to try to get a sense of if the street works or not with that kind of a reconfiguration. So I'm happy to hear people's thoughts on, you know, what that would be like if we did this project and the city said we're not going to study traffic today. We're going to design the street as a 5-to-3 with bike lanes, and do some bus improvements and pedestrian safety improvements. We're not going to study delay, and we don't care where those cars go. We're satisfied that there's enough street, they'll find a way. Anybody okay with that? Any adverse reactions? I can let you stew on it for a little while.
Are there any alternatives which take maybe a block to the left or right through the neighborhood streets if you were to design a bike way through it, which could have lower traffic volumes and probably not increase the distance by too much? I'm just curious.
Yeah, there is a
presentation recently from the city of Berkeley where they showed a map for the bikeways in Berkeley, and they were sort of slightly offset from the major streets, major traffic corridors. So I'm just curious if that's a possibility.
That's the problem with Oakland.
Yeah.
The connected grid, yeah. And there almost never is a direct path that's parallel to an arterial.
There's like Schaefer and then
Shafter.
Down, yeah, Shafter, and then you go down Broadway.
The zigzaggy kind of
route. Yeah.
There's Shattuck, yeah, for a while.
Yeah, there's other bikeways for sure. We did a survey of like 500 of our members or just people biking in the corridor. And just ask them, why are you riding on Telegraph? Where are you going? And 80% said, I'm going somewhere on Telegraph. Way less said, I live way over there and I'm hiking way over there and I'm using Telegraph to get through.
I think this also reflects the sort of longer term vision, which is that we don't want to continue to encourage people to drive. We know that as a society that that's not a sustainable way for us to go, but it is ironic that we still design our analyses to try to facilitate that, whereas this, what you're proposing, would be much more in line with what we've said as a society that we actually want. At least in California, we want to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we want to encourage people to do other things, and it's more sort of like, okay, and this would be putting our money where our mouth. At least our resources there,
you know, where we go. Yeah. In defense of, you know, the city's traffic engineer, he or she would say, you know, the people who live and work in this area, they want to know what the backup's going to be like. You got to tell them. And you can't just say, cars will find another way. Oakland's planning director actually has said, yeah, you can just tell people they're going to find another way. But the traffic engineering department's not quite there yet. But it is a political issue. Let's take a quick look at 14th Street, downtown Oakland. This is another project we're working on getting bikeway on. It's a 4-lane street with no center turn lane right now. And it connects on the right to Lake Merritt. There's a brand new bikeway around Lake Merritt, and Lakeshore Avenue is part of that. And then 14th Street in West Oakland, to the west of the Purple Line, has new bike lanes, and that is actually the connector to the Bay Trail. The Bay Bridge bike path that will be completed in San Francisco hopefully soon. So this is a east-west gap right through downtown Oakland, and the city has waited a year and is going to wait another year to do a traffic study to, again, answer this question, what kind of delays are we going to be looking at if we do this? If we take out a lane in each direction and put a bike lane in. And this is downtown Oakland. This is actually one place they do have a decent grid going on in downtown. And so there's any number of streets here that cars could use to get east and west. If we took out lanes on 14th Street, there's 11th and 12th. Those are both one-way streets, four lanes in each direction. We have nowhere near the capacity we need. There's 17th and 19th Street above there that already see a lot of traffic going through, and they're one-way streets, three lanes in each direction. There's 13th Street just right next door to 14th that was a good through street. There's 8th, there's 9th, there's 7th, there's this freeway there. There's a BART system that runs east-west right there. There certainly are plenty of options. So what would be the worst-case scenario that the engineers say? We're not even going to study the traffic today. We're just going to figure out how to design the bike lane on this street with two lanes for cars. What should the city's new policy be post-CEQA on this? Well, something to think about. This is another good case where I think we're just wasting our time and we're wasting public taxpayer dollars to study something we don't need to. Anybody live or spend a lot of time in downtown Oakland? Do you ride 14th Street?
I ride random all different streets because there's not, none of them are particularly better than others anyway. I go where I want to go.
The pavement quality is like pretty bad. Although 14th is one of Oakland's better streets by far in terms of pavement quality. Go ride Jackson if you want an e-ticket ride.
Then we got one more question online.
Okay.
Should the way of bike traffic due to installation of a new bikeway compared to existing conditions be measured?
Yes. Yeah, I would say yeah. We should know, and I don't know if that question is motivated by the European approach to building bikeways. If you ride a bikeway in a lot of European cities versus just riding around on American streets, it's going to take you longer in Europe to get to where you're going. And there's going to be a lot more bike traffic signals that say stop. And here, you just go with the car traffic, which is optimized. I don't know if that way in all European cities, but the few that I visited, it just takes a little longer to get around, but it's way safer and way more people are doing it by bike. So yeah, I imagine it might be slower than somebody just staying on the street riding the traffic.
I have a question with just talking about 14th Street. Like, what are the requirements for the city to study projects like this, since there are different types of CEQA exemptions for bike lanes and all? So what do they need to study? Is it just politically motivated as far as what they can get?
Well, we're in this transition period. We have new CEQA guidelines that once approved, we're going to say you shall not study delay. You can study VMT. You may study auto trips, something like that, which this would have no impact. If that was the rule, is your project going to increase VMT? Every bike project is just moving right along to the next step. And Oakland's not going to allow that to happen. They're going to want to know, what are the traffic impacts?
They'll voluntarily study these things.
They'll have to come up with their own new transportation policy, kind of aside from CEQA. Because they know somebody's phone's going to ring off the hook if they just start changing things and don't think about it. So they're going to have to do it. Every city's going to have to do it. And we'll see what they do. What Emeryville does, Emeryville is the lead city in the East Bay. They say traffic delay is not an environmental issue. It's not a secret impact. We don't extract fees based on that. We do it other ways. And we just consider traffic delay, it's a social inconvenience that we need to think about. But it's not going to stop our project, including bike projects.
But the best of both worlds, in my opinion, would be to measure traffic congestion, but only to extract fees and then spend the mitigation money on transit and bicycling. But it's like trying to play both sides of the coin, which is difficult to do.
And you cite Palo Alto as an example of a city that has done that. Berkeley's proposed it for West Berkeley, and maybe San Francisco does it too, but Berkeley's not implementing it. And so I don't think a lot of cities are doing that kind of approach yet.
Right. And my comment letter to the OPR on the SBS 743 metrics would be kind of the same idea. Level surface has been bad because they want to mitigate it, and that's build bigger and bigger roads. But, one of the main problems is how they've been mitigating it. And as long as you call it a significant impact, then, the logical thing is to mitigate it, but
right. By widening the road.
Yeah, by widening the road. But no, how about mitigating it by giving people options? That's how I concluded my paper. We need options. Right now we have no options for the most part.
Yeah. Well, speaking of widening roads, anybody been in downtown Concord? It's actually one of the more lovely older downtowns in the East Bay that they've just gutted with these huge, wide, one-way, multi-lane arterials to get people all around. But to their defense, they're doing planning to make it more bike-ped friendly, and they're going to propose bike lanes on Concord and Clayton, where you don't see the purple line in the downtown area. And then they're proposing on Detroit, kind of to the west a little bit. So the purple line shows you where they're not proposing the bike lanes. They're proposing bike lanes on either side, and they're not going to connect them. And the reason is the traffic engineer doesn't want to lose a lane of traffic on that stretch. It's six lanes right now, three in each direction, and he's just too scared to take out a lane to put the bike lane in to connect two other bike lanes that they're building. And you see Willow Pass Road, one block over. It's a huge arterial. You see, I think it's called Galindo. It heads up to the freeway as well. There's options out there for cars to get around.
Are they proposing just a striped bike lane out there, or are they going to buffer it?
Buffer.
Okay.
Yeah. On Clayton and Concord. Mm-hmm. On Detroit, it's a bike boulevard style design. And then Broadway. This is Upper Broadway in Oakland. We want to bring that from 4 to 3 with bike lanes. And the neighbors who live to the right of this project are worried about being able to take a left onto Broadway and come downtown. And if you have one lane left, you know, the cars are a little more stacked up and making a left is a little different, even though there is a center turn lane left. So now the traffic engineers may, if there's enough political pressure, have to study all these left turns and delay the bike project. So we're worried about that. And we'd like to be able to say, don't study it. You've got all these streets that you can take a left from. There's plenty of options to take a left. We're even going to add a new light at Lawton to help with that left. So these are four upcoming projects that we're dealing with delays due to traffic, delays due to studies of traffic delays. Yeah, that's what I just said. And we'd like the city of Oakland and these other cities to have a policy that says we're not studying traffic delays. This is going to be coming up. Every city's going to have to do it and figure it out.